At least 58 people now dead, more than 500 people wounded.
17 fires burning right now in the state, 5,700 structures destroyed, at least 35 people dead.
I mean, this was a massive church just outside of San Juan with a congregation of 3,000 people. Maria just shredded this building.
ISIS released a new video today showing the execution of 21 Coptic Christians kidnapped in Libya.
Two suicide bombings killed more than 40 people on one of the holiest days on the Christian calendar.
North Korea fires yet another missile, but Pyongyang claims this one will be able to hit the U.S. mainland, striking cities like Los Angeles, Denver, even New York and Boston.
They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
The world seems so unstable, so insecure. Everything is changing way too fast. But there are some things that are steadfast, things that never change: God and His Word. Randy Reams is pastor of Kindred Bible Church in Nampa, Idaho. Join Pastor Randy now as he shares truths from God's unchanging Word.
First Samuel chapter 17, verses 40 through 52. So stand when you're there, please. First Samuel chapter 17, verse 40 to 52. He, that is David, took his stick in his hand and chose for himself five smooth stones from the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag which he had, even in his pouch, and his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. And when the Philistine came on and approached David with his shield bearer in front of him, I have no idea how much his shield weighed, but I can only imagine. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and ruddy, which means red, with handsome appearance. I don't know why that makes a difference. And the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine also said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beast of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword, spear, and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. And I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the beast of the earth, and all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all of his assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's. He will give you into our hands." And then it happened when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David. David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand into his bag and took from it a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead. And the stone sank deep into his forehead, so he fell on his face to the ground. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him, but there was no sword in David's hand. Then he ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it from its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they changed their pants. No, that's not right. Champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and Judah rose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the valley and the gates of Ekron, and the slain Philistines lay along the way to Shaaraim, even to Gath and to Ekron. You may be seated. I know it's a story we've all heard before. Even if you're not a churchgoer, you've heard this story before. What's interesting is if we begin this journey, if we were all to go up to verse 1 and begin reading there, we find that this Philistine has been doing this every morning and every evening for 40 days. Those of you who aren't really good at math, that's 80 times. But more than that, you awoke each morning to your coffee and the big mouth giant. You went to bed every night listening to the big mouth giant. Now, I knew it says this in the first couple verses, that Israel was in their battle array. All dressed up, they looked the part. I don't understand why you would not be afraid of going into a battle with a bunch of guys, including Goliath. He would have been a bunch of those guys. You're all dressed up. You're ready for battle. But then one guy. Okay, one guy. I don't know about you, but I'd rather face one than a bunch. I've seen these movies in the old days. You know, I know in the movies, you know, you fight only the guy in front of you. Nobody comes from the sides or the back. You know, and they wait their turn. In real battle in those days, that way it was. At least when you're facing one guy, at least you can see what's coming at you. Nobody's getting you from the back, okay? But they were all prepared for battle on the outside. They came to church all dressed up. See, corporately, they looked ready. Because there is something, I'll call it crowd power. There's something about being in a group. And it doesn't just happen to teenagers, adults. That group think, that group attitude that happens, okay? When they're in the group, they're okay. But the idea of just me, you got to realize, Goliath and probably his five brothers were in that army. He wasn't the only giant. What you find in the story is at one point when they get up, when David is actually comes with the lunch, they're out shouting, yeah, let's go get him. And then the giant starts talking. And they go, is it lunch yet? There are some battles you can fight, and there's others you cannot, especially alone. First things first, I don't know if it was Goliath or the general or the king of the Philistines had a brilliant idea. He had a brilliant idea. He knew as long as they worked together, they were okay. But if he can change that from we to me, he knew he had him. And the first thing he did is he made it look impossible. He sent out the meanest, ugliest, biggest, baddest guy they had. Like I said, you saw Joshua standing up with his head almost touching that thing up there. Okay? Now, I don't know what he weighed, but I know Shaquille O'Neal. How many of you know who that was? Right. He was well up close to 300 pounds, but he wasn't fat when he was playing basketball. And he was 7'4". I'm not sure what Goliath weighed, but he'd probably be pretty massive. Had a guy that just carried his shield. When you count his armor and his spear and his javelin and his sword, I cannot imagine. I just can't. It's like, have you seen those people that have just finished the Museum of Noah's Ark? Anybody seen that besides me? And you see the size of that thing. It sort of puts that Noah story into perspective and why it took him 120 years to build it. We have no way, no perspective to recognize this one guy that comes out. We all wondered why people don't do this. Why do you send all these guys off to war? Why don't the two kings just fight each other? Right? Wouldn't that save a lot of time? You know what I'm saying? You just put the heads of the two teams together, the two enemies, and let them fight it out. This guy changes what the warfare looks like from a group effort to a single effort, and then makes it look impossible. So one of the ways that he makes it personal, and that's the way I'll say it, is personal. Getting each individual, when I'm in a group, I'm thinking about us. Goliath is in that group. But once I get you individually to see yourself against the one circumstance. If I can get you, and I think this was brilliant on the side of the Philistine commanders, was to get you to individually question your courage and your ability. That's huge. When I coach football and you're going to face another team, if the other guy right off the bat, or our guy, whichever one, could intimidate the guy on the other side right away, where he began to question his ability, that guy battled to maintain the whole game. It didn't matter if he was faster, stronger, bigger, whatever. And one of the things you had to do as a coach is overcome that in the individual. Because we knew this, if one guy didn't do his job, the team broke down. Just get him to question. Just get that other guy to question. He's not as tough as you. He's not as fast as you. He doesn't hit as hard as you. That guy would battle all game. So I would take a little guy with confidence all day long. A David over Goliath any day of the week. Because he could get the Goliath, if you will, on the other side to wonder if he... And the Super Bowl this last year was probably a good example of that. Okay? He took the battle from us to me, and then he did it this way, by repetition. Many know what that is when you teach something by repetition, what that's called? Inculcation. Repetition. Every morning, every night, you can't do it. Every morning, every night, you can't do it. Every morning, every night, just you, and you can't do it. Every morning and every night, reminding them that there wasn't a man among them that had the courage or ability to take this guy on. I will tell you, that is a prolific tool of the enemy. And you and I both know this. If you could take the brightest young person or even adult, and you tell them every day they can't, they're not able, they will begin to believe they can't and they're not able. David knew something that these others, including his brothers, did not know. Now, when we get to verse 12, in the midst of this, we didn't read it, but it says this, David, the son of the Ephraite of Bethlehem of Judah, whose name was Jesse. I don't understand why he's telling us this, because he just told us this in the previous chapter, remember? And he had 8 sons. Jesse was old in the days of Saul and advanced in years among men. The 3 older sons of Jesse had gone after Saul to battle, and the names of them gives their names. And David was the youngest. He's telling us right now that David was the least. If you got 7 brothers and sisters and the inheritance starts with number 1, there ain't much left for you when you get to the bottom. You're reliant on your older brothers to give you anything. Those 3 oldest brothers went off to fight, but the youngest stayed home. Well, he was actually going back and forth, because what happened last time? Do you remember what happened last week? Yeah, the evil spirit would come upon Saul, and David would come and play for him when this spirit came upon him. And it says here that David went back and forth from Saul. So he didn't stay there. He was going back and forth to his father's house. Why? To tend his father's flock at Bethlehem. So it's trying to show us a contrast between the because the word but, by the way, that tells us it's a contrast. The 3 older boys, they're soldiers, but then there's David. He's the musician. He's the sheep herder. Okay, they're showing you this contrast between the fighters and the musician who plays with sheep. This is thrown right in the middle, giving us information we already knew, right? So it's trying to make a point. But I want you to know it does tell us something about the character of David. He had now hit the big time. His music is what the king wanted. But he did not forsake his father in his old age. Wait a minute. David could live at the palace, but he saw his dad in his old age, and it emphasizes, okay, that he was advanced in age among men. And David would leave the palace to go tend sheep. So it does tell me something about his character. And then it says that his dad comes to him and it says, take lunch to your brothers. This is 15 miles from the Valley of Elah from Bethlehem. So he says, take an ephah of grain, which is about 36 pounds, by the way, 30 to 36 pounds, 10 loaves of bread, 10 chunks of cheese, and run. 15 miles? You got to be kidding me. I couldn't run 15 miles with nothing. And even when I was young, I was a sprinter. I didn't want to run anything over 400 meters. So he tells him to run. And the reason I emphasize that is because it says later that David arose early in the morning, left the flock with a keeper. Notice again, he doesn't relinquish his responsibility to his father. Took supplies and went as Jesse commanded. That's the word. That means he ran, because that's what Jesse told him to do. Young people, listen to me. I don't care how old you get, you honor your father. I don't care if you hit the big time and he asks you to run 15 miles carrying a load. And this is where we see, and he says, and he came to the circle of the camp while the army was going out in battle array, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines drew up in battle array, army against army, ready to go. The brave heart speech has been given. David leaves the baggage, the lunch with the baggage keeper, the guy that delivers the stuff, I guess is the mail guy, and he runs to the battle line, sees his brothers. Here's the guy hollering, the giant hollering. And this is what it says. David heard them. Then all the men of Israel saw the man, and they fled and were greatly afraid. Not afraid, greatly afraid. And the language here in the Hebrew is the idea of ongoing. So we didn't just see him and go, I'm afraid, I'm leaving. Even after they fled, they were still afraid. So he asked, wait a minute, what will be done for this guy? And you heard me tell the kids, great riches. His daughter, the king's daughter, that's how bad it's got after 40 days. I imagine on day one, he didn't offer these things. But day one, I'll make whoever, two, three, day, I'll make you rich. Day 20, I'll throw my daughter in. That's got to make you feel good, all right, daughters. After 40 days, how about this? No taxes for your family for the rest of their life. His brother then, now get this. This is what his brother Eliab says. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David and said, why have you come down here? With who have you left those stupid few sheep? I added the stupid. Those few sheep in the wilderness. I know your insolence and your wickedness of heart. You've just come down here to see blood. That's my favorite, to see the battle. Notice that the attack is personal. His own brother. Now, it's bad enough you got to fight a bad guy, but when you're fighting family, that's horrible. And it's a personal attack on his very character and his motive, okay? First of all, you're just a sheep herder, go back to those. So he's going to attack his qualifications, attack his character, call him insolent. That is sort of pridefully disrespectful. And his heart is wicked, and then questions his motive. What does David do? And he turned away from him to another. Talk to the hand. He ignored him, doesn't even address him, except for, man, what have I done? Forget it, and turns to someone else, asks the same question again. Now, he just heard the answer. That's probably for emphasis or just to irritate his brother. I'm not sure. So the message gets around to Saul that David's saying, man, I'd fight this guy. So David has him come to see him Saul at his tent. And David says, let no man's heart fail him on account of him, that is the bad guy. Your servant will go and fight the Philistine. And Saul said, now listen, you are not able to fight this Philistine. You are a youth. Well, he has been a warrior from his youth. You're not able. He has too much experience. You have none. How does David deal with that? No, he tells him, I do have experience, right? Wait a minute. I'm out tending the sheep. Along came a lion and a bear, and you read it. I grabbed him by the beard. That's not a bow and arrow or a sling. That's by hand. That he takes on and seized him by the beard and struck him and killed him. This is a very important lesson you must learn. Your character, your courage to stand for God will be tested in private. If you can't face the bear and the lion, if you can't face the internet in private, you can't do it in public. It will come and show its ugly face. If David couldn't handle a bear and a lion privately, he wouldn't have been able to handle the giant publicly. But because he was faithful in the private place, God's going to use that to elevate him in the public place. What you do in private matters. By the way, when you conquer and win alone, you defeat the lion and the bear, there is no one to brag to. Just think about that. You've killed the lion and bear, and there's nobody to tell. See, we like to tell people when we accomplish great things. But I'll keep moving. And this is where, now notice what he does. He says, because God did this with the lion and the bear, this is verse 37, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. When you rehearse what God's done in the past, we'll stir your faith for what God can do now. So Saul decides to put his armor on him. So Saul tries to put his armor on David. David said, this don't work. I don't need it. And he goes out to meet the giant, picking up the five stones in the creek. And if you go look at the Valley of Elam online pictures, there's always pictures of people standing in this creek picking up rocks. Somebody's got to be putting more rocks there by now with all the tourists. That thing wouldn't be any left. But I want to interject here. As David goes out to meet Goliath here in verse 40, you have a parenthetical statement placed later that really belongs here. Verse 55 and 56, you can place right here. So when Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, whose kid is this? Now, many people call this a contradiction in Scripture. Because if you remember, in the last chapter, he says, get me somebody to play the harp. And the guys go and they find David and instead of Jesse. But they act, and I emphasized it last week, he sent servants to do that. David just shows up and plays. There's no evidence that Saul actually knew whose son it was. Plus, if you add to that, and some scholars argue this, just the business of being king makes him forget. But why would he be asking whose son is this? Because what did he promise? Yeah, no taxes for the family. He says, wait a minute, whose kid is, if I'm this guy, I ain't gonna be in taxes. I hope he's not too rich. So as he goes out, he sees this, and Abner says, I don't know whose son it is. That puts us back in 44, which you heard us read, okay? What is interesting is it says, I like the ands. The giant Goliath says this, I'm gonna feed your flesh to the birds and the beast. Then David says this, I will strike you down and remove your head from you. And, now watch this, he said he would feed David's body to the wild beast. Listen to what David says. He recognizes this is more than just his victory. Because he says this, and I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Oh, you thought you're all that? Dude, you may feed one, but watch me, what I do. Your whole army is going to become lunch for the critters. Okay? I want you to understand how bold that is. It isn't just I'm going to defeat you with sling. He is proclaiming at that point a greater victory that will take the guys that were back that were all cowards. That's going to take them. So he's making a proclamation about what they're going to do. Why does he do it? That all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or spear, that all of them would know that the battle is the Lord's. That was the problem to begin with. That's why Goliath come out and address their individual fears, their individual insecurities, because they didn't recognize it was God's battle to start with. And they pursue these guys, leaving the bodies on the road. So he flings a stone, as you know, and it hits him in the forehead, and he goes face down. I think that's important, okay? Because if you remember at one time when the Ark of the Covenant was before a statue and it fell face down, one of the words for worship in the Old Testament is to lay prostrate, face down. So when he says that I'm come to you in the name of the Lord God of a host of the armies of Israel, Goliath, and I've actually watched a couple clips because I would like to show one, but nobody sees him fall face down. They all saw him fall backwards. And I go, yeah, you missed the point. I want to see him fall face down before God. And then, of course, he lops his head off. I want you to understand, for David, this is literally impossible. For David. Now, it's also personal for David in this sense. Before we judge all the guys standing there that didn't go, none of them were destined to be king. David was the one destined to be king.
This is Pastor Randy Reams of Kindred Bible Church in Nampa, Idaho. I want to thank you for joining us today for Truths from God's Unchanging Word. This broadcast is an outreach ministry of Kindred Bible Church. I'd like to invite you also to visit our website, kindredbible.org. There you can listen to today's broadcast as well as previous broadcast. If you're being ministered to by the broadcast, I'd like to encourage you to let us know. You can email us at info@kindredbible.org, or you can write to us at Kindred Bible Church, P.O. Box 32, Nampa, Idaho, 83653. And I'd like you also to check us out on Facebook. Look at us over there and give us a like. So again, I want to thank you for listening to Truths from God's Unchanging Word.